Hello and welcome to Criterion
Close Up.
I'm Mark Herney and I'm here with Aaron West as always. Aaron, it's a little bit strange. It's just the two of us.
Just us, and I don't know if we can fairly call ourselves Close Up today, but I guess that's what our name is. But
right.
I was thinking Medium Cool. Somebody suggested that one for some other show. I think it might have been Tim suggested that. So
I like that, yeah.
We might be Medium Cool today.
Yeah. Yeah, we're certainly cool all the time, but not quite getting close up necessarily. Of course, the problem is, you know, between you and I, we're so geographically different that we're never truly close up, but through the magic of technology, we get to talk about Criterion movies. It's wonderful.
That's right, and in 4 months, we will be close up.
That's right, that's right.
For the live cast.
Yes, yeah, looking forward to that. So we have a new show, a new format. Before we get into that, did just want to mention that we will have a giveaway coming up, so folks should tune in. We'll have some more information on that upcoming. And this is a new format. We don't really have a specific name for it. We're just calling it Criterion Close Up because we're going to be talking about a lot of different topics and just kind of shooting the breeze, some of the things that have come up, doing some short takes as we have done before, talking about some movies that we've watched recently, some things Criterion related, some things maybe not so Criterion related. So hope folks enjoy it.
Yeah, we talk to each other all the time during the week about film stuff. So yeah, we're just doing the same thing we always do, and hopefully people find it interesting.
Yeah,
so
translating it to the podcast medium, sure.
And if they don't, they can put their comments in their pocket. That is a room reference
nice
for people that
reference.
Don't know. You got to have a room reference.
Nice. Speaking of comments, had some interesting feedback recently, Aaron.
Yeah. Actually, before we get to that, we probably should tell people that the show is going to change a little bit. We kind of decided to, well, we have lives and families and stuff like that. And so the reason we're doing this, and we're going to do some more like this in the future, where we're just going to talk about film and we're going to do some prep, but we're not going to, watch 10 movies and take a lot of notes. So we're doing this. The close up aspect of our show is going to, it's going to loosen up a little bit. We're probably going to do like maybe one really deep show a month. We talked about maybe like Bergman or maybe the double features. Those just are difficult for us to do all the time. And then we'll do maybe one title show a month and maybe one interview. And then we might do some of these. So anyway, that's what people will look forward to, and hopefully people won't hate it.
Yeah, a little bit different, but you know, we're not like you said, we're not getting away from the entire Criterion close up, but you know, as folks know, when you're delving into a movie like this, it is not that it's a difficult movie, but there's supplements to watch too. You're not just going to the multiplex and watching Batman versus Superman and then talking about it. You're watching special features and delving into it and thinking about the topic. You know, maybe a subtopic that we came up with. So definitely not abandoning the Criterion close-up mantra, just changing it up a bit.
Yep. Yeah, and also, we do a lot of prep. And so for a normal episode, sometimes it will take 3, 4 days, 5 days of prep, or you know, sometimes we're prepping until the last minute.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just need, for our family's sanity and for our own sanity, we need to take a little step back. But on the other hand, we love doing this, and there's so many movies we want to talk about. So actually, at least this gives us a vehicle, this and like Criterion Cast Chronicles, which a new episode will have gone up by the time we've done this. We're not on that one, but hopefully we'll be on the next one. So that's what's coming up. Well, that's what's coming right now.
Yeah. So I hope folks enjoy this, and we do love delving into the movies. We just need to, you know, kind of keep our family and ourselves sane, so to speak. So it's we'll look forward to doing those. I really do enjoy those, delving into it and talking to you and other folks about it. So we definitely want to keep that going.
And also we'll have a little time too. And of course a big deal is we travel sometimes during the spring and summer. So that's
busier time of year.
Right, busier time of year. Maybe when things slow down, we'll be able to do more. But But also, I think having a little time to do more long-term prep, we can do bigger shows. You know, I mentioned Bergman. We kind of toyed with the idea of doing Bergman, but how do you really do Bergman in a week?
Yeah.
So, you know, we could maybe, who knows, maybe break it into like three or four parts over, you know, of three or four shows in a long span of time. So, yeah, I think you'll find some deeper, interesting topics, the kinds that I think seem to resonate with people.
Yeah, definitely. So, Aaron, I'll kick it to you. I kind of teased it before, but about maybe talk about some feedback a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to use the word troll here, but this doesn't really quite fit into the traditional idea of a troll. And in fact, I think that the word troll is unfair in this case. So I was listening to Wrong Real Podcast, episode 119. It was with Martin Kessler, who, of course, is a friend of our show. Always great. And they were talking about erotic science fiction cinema. Actually, really interesting episode.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, so they did you hear it?
Well, I was actually just commenting on the genre, but I haven't listened to the episode yet.
Well, it fits with this story. If you want to go listen to not you, Mark, because we're doing a podcast right now, but if people want to pause and and go listen to like the first 10 minutes or so, what they do is they did a live table reading of some M's that are DMs that James got with a Twitter follower, or what happened was a Twitter unfollower. And this was based on a disagreement about 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I guess James, I haven't seen it, so I didn't listen to that episode, but I think James didn't take too kindly or wasn't a big fan of the film, and the person in question was, and they had had it out. And I would say it got pretty, well, this guy just kind of blew up on James, and you could say he threatened him a little bit, maybe. It was a little veiled. It's hard to tell. So James read that whole thing on the podcast, and I thought, wow, this guy is something. And James did give that guy's Twitter account. Now, I'm not going to, that guy has changed his Twitter account, and I know what it is, but I'm not going to give it out. So anyway, I go on Twitter later that day, and I look at this guy's feed, and the first thing I see is he had tweeted at James, and he said, "Thanks for the shout out. I actually appreciate it," or something of that nature. And then he had been on some group tweets with James and Martin and some others, and so I thought he was in on the joke. I thought he, you know, had calmed down. And so what I did is I jumped in there, and I did have a little bit of an edge, just because, you know, that was the I was maybe trying to tweak a little bit, but I pointed out how, you know, he was threatening, and whereas his profile picture on Twitter was not so threatening. And actually, I made a pretty stupid joke. It just really wasn't that funny. I didn't really feel it was disparaging either. So what happened is I got a direct message, and it said, "Hey, Aaron, blank you and your criterions." And that was it. I was blocked. And I was like, what? And I've since posted that message, and we've had a little fun with it, just, you know, because who doesn't want to think about what they want to do with their criterions if they're people like us?
I've dreamt about it.
In fact, somebody made a t-shirt, which was hilarious, which I can't post, but maybe I'll retweet it later so people know what we're talking about. So anyway, and then this guy, he did delete his, he blocked everybody. In fact, James mentioned in a later episode, he even blocked Martin Kessler, who was doing nothing. He was just a bystander. And I kind of think that I was actually just collateral damage too. I didn't really have an axe to grind with the guy. I was just, I think it was a Tuesday afternoon, just trying to have fun on Twitter. We do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Share a few laughs. But of course, then it got crazy. And I tweeted the image of the DM. I didn't put his name on his Twitter handle on there, but so I don't think people could find him. And I think you retweeted it, and so some other podcasts got wind of it, and apparently they'd heard from this guy too.
Yeah.
In fact, I think pretty much all of our friends had heard of this guy. Anyway, and they went on leaving negative reviews. In fact, did you see the one they left for us?
Yeah. He'd mentioned how we not really relevant because we cover movies, I think, before the 60s or during the 60s, something to that effect.
We go a little earlier than the 60s, actually.
The teens, the 20s, the 30s, yeah.
Did you see some of the tweets and some of the activity, or what did you think of that?
Yeah, it's just, I guess, being a little bit of an outsider, it was unfortunate. It's really just the word that comes to mind, because I think there probably were misunderstandings on either side, and it's kind of an unfortunate thing that happens, I think, with social media, because you don't get that face-to-face, and people take things the wrong way, and I think sometimes people will make a comment that they, may regret later, from any side. And, that's where I think deleted tweets come from and that kind of thing. So,
Sure. And we're all guilty of, that was strong. Let me redo that.
And
hope the person didn't see it. But I pulled up the review here. He says, the subject is some cursing and boring content. One star, not really a fan of this one. It covers movies from the 60s that aren't relevant. Aaron West is totally clueless when it comes to films. This one puts me to sleep. I'm okay. I think the puts us people to sleep is fair. That's cool.
I can understand that. I could see why people might listen to us as they're trying to fall asleep. Sure.
Yeah. In fact, and is that a bad thing? And we like sleep.
Right.
Anyway, usually we do ask for iTunes reviews at the end, but this time I want to ask for people to actually, take up our honor and give us a review to kind of make up for that one, because this one was pretty nasty, and it was personal. It was directed towards me, but I didn't really do anything to the guy. I think he just, got my name stuck in his head and just took it out on me. Also, I did find out he did leave reviews for other podcasts, and I read some of those. And again, this is why I really don't want to bring this guy's name up. But apparently he made a comment on another one about how a bunch of podcasters were bashing him for being bipolar. And so I was like, wow, okay. And I sympathize with, I've known people that have bipolar disorder, and I know it's not easy.
Yeah, me too.
And it actually, the puzzle fit together. That makes sense why this guy was so explosive. So I just want to say that I have nothing against people being bipolar, and if this person ever listens, I'm sorry, dude. I did not mean to. We were not trying to bash you for this disease. We wouldn't do that. I think you and I are pretty responsible people. So anyway, we spent a lot of minutes talking about. I'm not going to use the word troll because I think it was just we just got we got an enemy. who wants us to make love to our collections. So.
That's right. Yeah, unfortunate, byproduct of. I mean, you put some content out there, and if you're active on social media, this kind of thing does come up, unfortunately. So
Oh yeah, we've been trolled many times, actually. Yep. In fact, some of our guests have been trolled, we are okay with it. This one was a little harsher than it was a little surprising how harsh it was. So, but don't harass this guy if you find him, please, not on our account. So,
yep. So on some happier news, let's talk about some Don Hertzfeld. I know I didn't get a chance. I received my disc, and I know you did too, Aaron, and I think you got a chance to delve into most of it.
Pretty much all of it. It's amazing.
It's the disc. There was a Kickstarter to really get Don Hertzfeld to make a disc, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And my understanding, I don't know if it's complete, but it does have a lot. I mean, it's got World of Tomorrow, It's Such a Beautiful Day, some of his short films, or student films, I should say, and some mm-hmm. other short films. Also comes with a DVD, a bonus DVD of Everything Will Be Okay. Really nice package that a lot of folks I think received.
Yeah, it was amazing, and we should mention that if people don't know Don Hertzfeld, he is the quintessential DIY animator. He does everything himself. He does the narration. And he did hand drawing, the scoring, the recording for World of Tomorrow. Actually, is digital, but he recorded his niece for one of the characters.
Oh, nice.
And so it's really, but he's also edgy, and he's funny, and he's actually influenced like some of the Adult Swim kind of people, or the Adult Swim cartoons. So yeah, it's not for everybody, and I don't know if I think there's probably some overlap between our audience and this type of film. It's artsy. In fact, I was going to recommend it for a friend, and I was trying to think of like entry points. And actually, I think probably Rejected, which was Oscar nominated, and then World of Tomorrow, and then maybe some of the other ones. And then I would say that the disc is titled "It's Such a Beautiful Day." I would say I would watch that last. That one seems to be pretty divisive and difficult. And again, it's not a word I like to use when describing film, but people will find it boring.
Well, it is. It's the longest of all of them, too, I believe, because it's about an hour. I think all the other ones are short films.
Yeah, it's actually a combination of three shorts that he combined into a feature. So I think it's phenomenal. I'm not going to get into what I love about it.
Yeah.
But just because we're not going to do spoilers here. Now, World of Tomorrow was also Oscar nominated, and have you seen that one yet?
Yeah, that one I did watch. It's fantastic. I remember our friend Tim Costa, first time watchers. It was his number one film of last year. So high praise. I can get it.
I've been pimping it all year, and because I watched it early in the year on Vimeo, and it's still my number one as well. So I still have quite a few things to see, but I can't foresee it not being top five. It's just so strong, and I don't mind that it's a short film up against feature films, 2.5 hour superhero films.
Nice, yeah. I didn't realize it was your number one. That's great, Aaron.
Yeah,
well. Very cool.
Oh yeah, so giveaway. So I ordered three copies from the Kickstarter, and I figured, maybe I would sell one for an outrageous profit. Maybe I'd give one to a friend. But you know what? He's selling them now from his website, and I probably could sell one from an outrageous profit. But instead, we're going to give one away to a listener. Sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here's how this will work. You guys have to tweet us at CriterionCU, again, CriterionCU, and you have to say, "Hurts me." You can have some fun with it. But your phrase has to say "hurts me," and it has to be spelled right.
Yes.
You have to look up Don Hertzfeld and spell it right, because I know that people are going to want this. Because it could be out of print, and it could fetch a hefty price on eBay at some point. So again, tweet "hurts me" of some variety to CriterionCU, and we'll take a little bit of time before we announce the winner. We want this to get to Criterion Cast and all those listeners hear it. You have a copy, so yeah. Otherwise, that would be really bad form for me to give it away to a listener. Anyway, so we haven't done one of those in a while. We'll see.
Yeah, it's cool. I wanted to mention something I loved on the back of it too, Aaron. It says, "Proudly making their first appearance on Blu-ray just in time for the format to slowly grow obsolete."
I love that. He has a very, very wicked sense of humor. And and I don't know if you caught the Manta Ray update in his Kickstarter. Did you see that?
No.
Like maybe 3 weeks before they went into production, he made a joke that they'd accidentally replaced Blu-rays with Manta Rays, and
they were gonna
ship them out, but you had to have an aquarium, and we'd recommend you don't put it in your player, and so
typical kind of email that he would send for all the Kickstarter updates. It's pretty funny.
Really funny Kickstarter. In fact, if he does this again, just give a couple dollars just to get the emails.
He's
a funny guy.
It's worth it. Nice. So we thought we'd talk briefly. This is another thing that Aaron and I share back and forth very often. Some recent purchases, things that we've bought. I don't have a lot really to share, Aaron. I mean, I guess we could say we've got the there was a Eureka sale at the same time. There was a Masters of Cinema sale through the Best Media, I believe it is, on Amazon UK. So that was ongoing along with the Arrow sale.
That was for Easter sale, right?
Yes, yeah.
For
that
Easter,
was the timing.
Easter weekend, yeah.
Yep. So some nice stuff there. Anything in particular that you were excited to grab?
From that sale, I did grab a few things. I can't help it.
Yeah, same here.
In fact, we joked we're close to Masters of Cinema complete. When you don't count titles on Criterion or titles that we think will be on Criterion.
Right.
So, but actually, I looked. There's still quite a few that I don't have. And I don't remember. I think I pre-ordered some of the new ones that are coming out. And for Arrow, I know I ordered Tenebrae. Which is Argento and some others, I forget. I guess I should have pulled those up beforehand.
I went kind of crazy with both those sales because I was behind on some of my Masters of Cinema stuff that I'd been waiting for a sale like this, you know, really where they get to be about 7 or 8 pounds. So I kind of pounced on, grabbed quite a few. So did get those. I didn't do the Arrow sale. I did buy something I'd been needing to get because I had Rabbit on the Blu-ray. They dropped the price on Amazon UK actually just yesterday on the Shiver Steelbook, so I did grab that and farewell my concubine. So glad to grab those.
By the way, they dropped the price on the Tarkovskis. Did you snatch those up?
I saw that. Yeah, I typically don't buy on the UK at pre-order prices. I usually wait until after because otherwise they charge me via pounds and I have to pay foreign transactions fees. It's a stupid sticking point. But yeah, they're back up in price. They got down to about 8 or 9 pounds. I think they're back up to like 12 or 13 again.
Yeah, that's interesting that you get charged that. Mine is no difference. It just does the conversion.
Yeah, I probably just need to get past that. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I didn't. They had a sale today. We're recording on Wednesday, and I didn't jump in. But you know, Screen Archives, I really wish they'd stop giving away free movies with Twilight Time because it's
This is the first time I passed too, just because I have a big shelf full of Twilight Times that I haven't watched. By the way, I found my Masters of Cinema. I got Roma, Les Miserables, The Other, and Computer Chess, and they were all nice. Like 5 to 6 pounds. The big one I pre-ordered was actually through a friend of the show, really talked us into it. I pre-ordered the Alan Clark 1969 to 1989 at the BBC, Descent and Disruption. Do you know his films very well?
I don't, no.
They're a little on the obscure side, but there's 23 films in here.
Wow.
And I had been eyeing it for a while. You know, he's considered a treasure, like an underground treasure. And some people I really respect had told me that you have to watch these films. They're not too readily available in the U.S. You might have heard of Scum.
Yes.
The movie, not the human people. Being sitting across from you, or the troll hunter.
Ouch.
I'm kidding. I'm quitting. Scum is one in the 70s. It was popular. There's also like Elephant, The Firm, not the Tom Cruise movie or the Gus Van Sant movie, but those are also big ones. But I'd been on the fence about it until, because it's expensive, it's about 100 pounds.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, $175 maybe. I haven't done the conversion.
Yeah, that's about right.
But I mentioned how I was, on the fence about it, and Lisi, and actually James, speaking of Wrong Reel, they said you have to get it. It's a must watch. It's going to go out of print. It's rare, so just put the money down. And so I did, and I was worried that I'd get in trouble, but my wife was actually on board, so she agreed.
Nice.
Thank you, Lisi, for the recommendation and pushing me in that direction.
Nice. I maybe I need to get my credit card out. You kind of sold me on it, Aaron.
Well, it comes out May 23rd, and the price has jumped up, actually. I think I got it from like 95 pounds. It's now 110.
Oh, wow. I'll wait. So, I'll wait for a price drop. Sounds interesting.
And if you get the transaction fee, well, assuming they don't sell out, you might wait for it to come out first.
Yeah, probably wait. Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, some good... Good purchases. A little bit of off the shelf there.
I'm not done. I got more.
Oh, nice.
We buy a lot of DVDs. I don't think people realize how much we buy just by us talking about it, because we don't really delve into the Region B stuff. And,
right. Yeah, folks have probably heard we are both obviously Region B, so we do buy Masters of Cinema and, you know, the Arrow UK stuff. When I think overall we don't typically cross over if it's coming from Criterion or it's available from Criterion. I mean, right. That's kind of, even on the DVD side, I typically, if it's available from Criterion and DVD, I'll stick with that. I won't buy an Arrow or Masters of Cinema on Blu-ray, even though it's the HD, just hoping for someday they'll bring back the Blu-ray upgrades. But
right, like we'll a touch of Zen and Dragon Inn, which came out and looks like those are coming out from Criterion. So I almost pulled the trigger, but I didn't.
I did pull the trigger on Touch of Zen, and the reason being a limited edition. I should have waited, knowing it was coming from Criterion.
And I should mention that everything we've mentioned that we bought so far is Region B, and you have to have a Region Free or Region B player. I know you have Region Free, and I have Region B. So anyway, these two babies arrived today. The Ken Russell series.
Funny. Nice.
The Great Composers and the Great Passions. And so these are documentaries about for the BBC he did. They were actually a great price. I think £17 for what's like a mini box set is what it ended up being. And so, yeah, I was happy to get those. And again, Lisi, connection to her. And we covered The Devils a couple weeks ago. But these are nothing like The Devils. These are pretty tame.
I've been kind of eyeing those too. We'll see. Might have to jump on those at some point.
And did you get the Star Wars?
No, I'm holding off on Star Wars. Glad you brought that up. I'm actually, I have a bunch of Amazon credits. I think what I'm going to do is stick with the. I have enough to basically buy it for free digitally, and then I'm waiting for them because they didn't release it in 3D. For this release, but I've heard from Ryan and Brian on Off the Shelf rumors of them releasing 3D maybe later this year. And a little tease for a discussion later in the show, might actually want to get a 4K version. So,
Yeah.
How about you? Did you buy it?
I did. I pre-ordered it today, actually. I held out, and then I actually listening to Off the Shelf, Ryan and Brian. But they convinced me. They were talking about the special features, and they mentioned a documentary that was actually pretty solid, an hour and a half documentary.
Nice.
So, yeah, I pulled the trigger and pre-ordered it today.
Nice. Well, and we've already covered that, too. Was it episode 23 and a half, if I remember? So just a little plug for that.
We did. And
With David Blakesley.
We liked it. We didn't love it, but actually, I kind of, and again, the Off the Shelf, they gave me hope, a new hope, that there might be replayability.
Yeah.
So might come off better a second time.
Yeah, I could see that. I did like it a little better the second time, but yeah, we'll see. I can wait. So, any other purchases?
Probably, yeah. Your Vice is a Locked Room, and I have the key that arrived this week. That was one that Cole recommended on a show, and I bought it on the show. So I think that was during the Slacker episode. I haven't seen it, though. It's a giallo.
Oh, nice.
So anyway, sorry, Ryan and Brian. We stole your show for about 10 minutes there.
Hey, we're movie fans, too. We like to buy stuff. I did, actually. I've grabbed... Deep Discount and DVD Planet have been having 10 and 50% off coupons. So I have grabbed a few things there, again, inspired by Brian and Ryan, some of the Warner Archive stuff like I Confess and The Big Sleep and The Wrong Man and a couple other. I finally got Je T'aime, the Renee film. So, a little bit of, supplementing the Criterion stuff.
Oh, and I got Key Largo, another Warner Archive. Nice. So because we're going to the Keys later, so I figured I kind of had to.
Yeah.
So anyway, we actually could probably do a show about the stuff we've bought. That's sad.
Yeah.
We buy a lot of stuff.
Our wives and our credit cards do not thank us.
But you know, I don't know about you, but I watch a lot of the stuff I see, and that. And in fact, there was I think it was Matt Gasteyer made an interesting comment in our Criterion Facebook group about how poorly Netflix has done for us, and that that the only way for us to get really good quality movies is to blind buy them for cheap. Yep. And that's actually most of my purchases are blind buys.
Yeah.
So he has a point, and a lot of times I don't revisit them. So maybe I need to rethink this.
Yeah, it's true. It's availability. You know, I know Walter Vinci from First Time Watchers is kind of in the same boat. We've talked about it, how, you know, you can't get everything, whether it's even if you supplement all the streaming, YouTube and, you know, Netflix DVD, your local library, you just can't get everything. And not that you need to own everything, but, you know, there's some instances where it's just, there's certain films that I think some of these are ones I just know I'm going to go back to, like The Big Sleep, you know, like Key Largo, like you mentioned, you know, I mean, right. I will be revisiting those movies. So they're worth owning.
That's actually why I get a lot of Region B stuff, is because that stuff you can't get here, period. And, and a lot of the stuff I order, you can't, it just is not available here. So it is blind buys. So what can you do? I want to see it. So
yeah, we're movie fans.
I'll spend the money.
That's what we do. So should we talk a little bit about a Criterion release? We did actually have this film on our list to talk about, and unfortunately, you know, with scheduling again, like we said, we decided to just make it into a bit of a short take like this. But we did both buy and watch Lady Snowblood, the Toshiya Fujita film. From, I believe, what is it, 1972 and 73 or 73, 74?
I believe that's right, yeah.
I know it's right around there. And, of course, the disc, it's a nice disc. It comes with Lady Snowblood 2 and just a couple of supplements. I mean, but really having Lady Snowblood 2 is a supplement in and of itself. There's an interview with Kiyoki, the writer of the manga that inspired the films, and the screenwriter Osada. We're just going to do it. Just a brief take. What do you think of Lady Snowblood, Aaron?
This was my second time seeing it. Seeing the first film, it was my first time seeing the second film, and I thought that the visual and I think the first time I had seen it was after Kill Bill on VHS or maybe on an old DVD, so it was not the same transfer.
Sure.
So it looked fantastic, and I thought the it just a beautiful transfer, and I really like the, you know, how gruesome it is. It really is gruesome, and you get those little knife blood explosions that that Tarantino ratcheted up to 11.
Yeah.
But they're still there. It's still pretty gruesome. And it's a revenge story, and I think it's a well-told story. I didn't like it as much. I don't think it replays as well the second time. Had you seen it before? Or
I hadn't seen it before. No, I watched, this was the first time, and I did kind of watch it a little bit, like the intro and the ending last night, just to kind of get a sense of a second viewing. But I could see that. You know, I did actually kind of like revisiting it a little bit. I put it on a separate TV, but you know, there's not really a lot there to, from a story standpoint, to kind of muckle onto, I think.
Fair. It's not dense. And it's a pretty simple revenge tale. It's actually a second generation revenge tale, which I think is unique. I think a lot of respects, it might not be as popular today if not for Kill Bill. And in fact, we were going to do a double episode, and I think that actually gives it some interesting context. And who knows whether it would be out on Criterion without Kill Bill. They certainly don't mention it in the disc at all.
It does seem like it is a bit of a genre film. It did feel like it certainly makes sense that Arrow put it out. I think it's nice that Criterion, you know, put it out, and we have Lady Snowblood 2, but yeah, I'm not sure, you know, like you said, is it one that you'd really want to revisit a lot? It is kind of nice. I did like kind of looking for the Tarantino influences, and you know, there were some, there's the flashbacks, and there's certainly you know, you think of the influences, there's that iconic scene with the four characters kind of looking down at her, which straight take from Kill Bill, where you get the same shot in Kill Bill specifically. So, like you said, revenge tale, but it is different, you know, because it's a daughter taking revenge rather than
not a bride. And there's not a group of villains. What were they called in Kill Bill? Yeah. Oh, I didn't research this before the show.
Was it the Crazy Eights?
Something like
Crazy
that.
Crazy 88s,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And they all like had that, nicknames. But... Tarantino.
Oh, yeah. There was like the, yeah, there was the four of them. There was, yeah, she was, there was Black Mamba, I think was, you know, her nickname, but yeah.
and there was Daryl Hannah had the eye patch. That was Daryl Hannah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah. I didn't rewatch Kill Bill because we didn't do the episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it does color it. Of course, Kill Bill is derived from, well, okay, Tarantino says he hasn't seen it, but it's
The Bride Wore Black.
The Bride Wore Black, yeah, the Truffaut. Yeah. I think you can't, I just don't think you can turn a blind eye to that. So
no, it really seems like a, you know, a mix of the two films.
It does,
but,
yeah.
You know, it really does from a story standpoint. But certainly the blood, especially from Kill Bill 1,
yes,
is all here in Lady Snowblood.
And there's a lot of spaghetti western too, but I guess from a plot perspective, those two films seem to be the prime influence. And who knows? Maybe he saw it and forgot it. You know, that happens. And
yeah, might have been drunk or something. You know,
or worse or different. I wouldn't put it beyond Quentin.
No.
So yeah, I didn't like the second film.
No.
In fact, I was pretty disappointed by it.
Yeah.
Oh. And you mentioned Japanese genre films. Actually, I do think it pairs kind of well with Zatoichi. Of course, Zatoichi doesn't have the violence, but or at least the graphic violence that this does.
Blood.
It has plenty
yeah.
of violence. But some of the fight scenes, I found myself thinking of Zatoichi. And also, I found myself thinking of Sword of Doom, too, because you have sort of the anti-hero that's misunderstood, although they do give more exposition on Lady Snowblood. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Do you see that?
Yeah. It's the same. Yeah, I think so. I didn't like part two that much either. I just thought it was pretty forgettable. I mean, it has just an uninteresting political backdrop and plot. So I mean, it's a good supplement, but I don't see myself revisiting it again.
Yeah, I've almost forgotten it because we watched a couple weeks ago. I remember the first one very well, but the second one, yeah, I do. Maybe if we understood the politics, and now if you know history, it was they were speaking towards the Meiji Restoration. So, and that you could draw parallels between that and modern Japan and that transformation. So they probably were saying something that we missed.
Yeah.
But still, it didn't work as a film, as a piece of entertainment, which I think is what it was supposed to be, at least for me. I'm sure it has its fans.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Lady Snowblood. I would say, would we both give it thumbs up to check out, Aaron, at least the first movie?
Yeah, and actually, I think the quote box set, it's really two movies on one disc. I'd say it's worth picking up, you know,
definitely
for half price, especially if you haven't seen it. I think Lady Snowblood 1 is special and very unique and one of a kind of movie.
Yeah.
Well, two of a kind now that there's
two of them.
Or three because of Kill Bill.
with Kill Bill. Cool. So, you know, we thought we'd talk a little bit about Criterion news. So there was, no newsstand specifically this week, but just thought we'd kind of weigh in on a couple things. So I'll lead into it, Aaron. The Clouds of Sils Maria cover was released. It's, I guess you'd call it, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it looks like it's the mountains of Sils Maria kind of turned on its side, and then mm-hmm. you have the faces of the three actresses there among the mountains, not necessarily among the clouds. And
I think they're supposed to be the smoke.
Remember? Oh, okay.
Or not the smoke, but well, they called it the smoke, but it was clouds that went through the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I first saw it, and maybe it's because I used to do some design, but I'm really. I think use of space is important. Like my first impression was not positive, whereas everybody else was positive. Just because you had those slivers with the three leads or the three actors, and you just there wasn't any clarity. And then I turned it sideways, and I felt like an idiot because I thought, "Wow, that's brilliant." And then I saw the high-res version. And have you seen that yet?
No.
All right, the high-res version looks neat, and I think that you know, the character faces are hazy, but I think that when we get the physical cover in our hands, it's going to look pretty special. So I've done a complete about face. I think it's actually a beautiful cover.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't quite come around to it yet because, and maybe it's because I think that scene is so gorgeous and iconic where you actually see the clouds in the film. I'll probably come around to it because I actually did just see it, for the first time yesterday. But usually a cover like this does seem to be saying something either about the film or it was maybe something you didn't think about. So certainly something to consider.
Yeah, and I'm really not a cover hater. I know there's some people that are very vocal about it, and rarely do I have a negative reaction at all to a cover, but I did it initially on this one. But actually, when you said that, it made me think. I think the Smoke Mountain might have been a neat cover without the actors' faces. So
yeah.
Now I'm kind of wishing they had done
back.
That. No, I still think it looks good. But.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what it is. I would have liked to have seen just kind of a normal representation of the mountains with the clouds. But, you know, I think it'll be, it plays into the movie. I'm sure I'll come around to it. It's certainly better than the artificial eye release, which just has the two,
right.
Really the two actresses, Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart, and not... Yeah, not that exciting of a pose. So,
and that was the same guy that did. He did Y Tu Mama Tambien, but he also did the Phoenix cover. So,
yeah, I can see that. It certainly looks a lot like Phoenix Higson, Nassim Higson.
Yeah, well, yeah. He likes smoke apparently because there's more smoke on this one.
Yeah. So cool. Well, I'll turn it to you, Aaron. I think we had a tease for the Richard Linklater film or films coming.
Yeah, he has a new movie coming out. Everybody Wants Some, which is the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, which I can't wait to see here probably in a few weeks. You haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I'm not even sure if it's playing here yet. We tend to get stuff late, but.
Yeah,
definitely
actually, same here. I think we'll get it in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
But Richard Linklater confirmed that the Before trilogy is coming to the Criterion Collection. He also confirmed Boyhood, but that's not as much of a surprise. And actually, the Before trilogy is not a surprise because, you know, they've dropped hints about a year ago. But the last we heard, I think there were some rights issues. And I think it's because two of the films are Sony and the other one is another studio, and I forget which one it is. And they weren't sure if they'd be able to work it out. So it sounds like, I mean, he didn't give specifics. It was probably just a general comment that somebody picked up on. And I think they posted at Criterion Forum. But, you know, it sounds pretty confident. So hopefully, yeah, I'd love it this year, this fall, I think would be terrific.
Yeah, it'd be great to get all of them. But I think the first two movies are Warner Brothers, and then the third one is Sony. So
okay.
Yeah,
I had it backwards.
Different
yeah.
rights.
Yeah. Well, and now they have a deal with both. So,
excellent.
And they've been releasing a lot of Warner Brothers, so that's great. I can't wait. Hopefully it happens soon.
Yeah.
But we
wait
don't
for
know.
Those.
And another thing, there was a lot of hubbub about women filmmakers, and what happened is there was an article in a website called Movie Mezzanine, and the author pretty much took Criterion to task for not having a lot of female filmmakers in the collection. And to be honest with you, I think it was a little unfair. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is as a guy talking to another guy. But I think that that there are issues with filmmakers in film, you know, not getting chances to direct film. But film history is basically, and Criterion is a reflection of film history.
Yeah.
There just weren't, you know, the studios did not hire a lot of, really hardly any females during the studio system. And, you know, it's really only within like the last 10, 20 years that we've seen a lot of them. Although there's more foreign filmmakers that are female. And but in the, actually what happened is Peter Becker from Criterion penned a response to that article. And he talked about some of the female filmmakers in the collection, and then he mentioned that there are more coming. And we know that there's Heart of a Dog, which of course you saw, right?
Yes.
Laurie Anderson.
Yeah.
He cited that one. And so it's kind of got some, there's actually a lot of people over at Criterion Forum that are like just throwing out art filmmakers that are female and just kind of speculating. And this is raw speculation. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing to base this on. So I don't, are there any female filmmakers you think that might fit into the collection?
Boy, I mean, I was thinking of some of the, you know, existing ones like Chantal Ackerman and Claire Denis, but
I was thinking those two as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're ones that are already in the collection, and I echo again what you said, Aaron. I mean, I think it's not really a reflection, or shouldn't be a reflection on Criterion. It's more of a reflection of, you know, the output and who's been able to work as filmmakers in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, I totally agree with you, but I don't know. What do you think? Any directors that come to mind?
Well, there really is. In fact, the go-to Criterion Forum in the rumors news section, and they have just thrown out, you know, dozens of really good selections. Some that jump out at me, there was Miranda July, I think, was mentioned, Me and You and Everyone We Know. Mm. I didn't write them down, so I don't remember a lot of them. There were, saying, more female direct, or more titles from people in the collection, like Denis, like Brie, like maybe Lucretia Martel. Well, definitely people would not be screaming for Lena Dunham. I think that one gets a lot of hate.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I mean, more Agnes Varda. We've got an Eclipse series and four films.
Yeah, you, I mean, could.
Sure.
And she has some more work out there. And actually, Ackerman, I think there's probably a pretty good chance that Jean Dielman, Quai de Commerce, gets upgraded because it's now touring. Yeah, and even though they haven't been doing a lot of blue grades lately, I think that one, just given her untimely passing and this narrative about women filmmakers, I think we could definitely see that coming. Well, I shouldn't say definitely, but I very likely possibility.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Heart of a Dog, would love to see, you know, even more from Laurie Anderson. So yeah, that's, yeah,
yeah. And I think people always mention, you know, Catherine Bigelow. I don't know if her films are pretty good quality, but I don't know if they fit the Criterion.
Yeah, she was the one I was thinking of too. I mean, I just don't see something like Hurt Locker coming, Zero Dark Thirty. I mean, no. Good films, but just not, you know, probably ones that are Criterion are going to release.
Or Point Break or something like that.
Strange Days. Yeah, it just doesn't quite fit.
I'm actually pulling it up. There's some speculation.
K-19, The Widowmaker. Yeah, I haven't seen Near Dark, so I can't comment on that one, but yeah.
There's talk of Sally Potter. She's done quite a few. Yeah, I guess Lynn Ramsey, of course. She did Ratcatcher, which is
in
the collection.
Yeah, and that is in the collection. Yeah.
Morvern Collar, and I know it is Morvern. It's spelled weird. That is a good movie. I've seen that, but that kind of fell off the face of the earth after 2000. We'll love to see that come back. Let's see. They had a few others, some foreign filmmakers as well. There are quite a few French female filmmakers. And elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. So, Lynn Ramsey had We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was actually from Oscilloscope, I think. But
that's, yeah, right.
Good,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, there's rights issues, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm all for diversity and not just, absolutely, not just females, but I think people of color, you know. And of course, we have. Criterion is very diverse geographically because there's films from all over the world, although I'd like to see more from South America. Besides Martel, yeah, we haven't really seen much at all. Even Mexico, I don't think we have anything from Mexico. Why Two Mama?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we talked about that with when we were talking to Alex Cox. Yeah, could certainly use some more. I guess as far as news go, one other thing we wanted to mention is there was the wacky drawing in the latest newsletter, which was sent. It's the March newsletter. It was sent on March 31st and is a Buddhist monk being touched by God.
Yeah. there were a lot of funny responses to that one, I thought. Yeah. There was like a lot of Buddha references. I didn't write down the jokes. I wish I remembered them, but a lot of people had a lot of fun with that one. This was no doubt a touch of Zen, though, by King Hu, which we just mentioned. It looks like you might have two copies. Well, actually, I think you will have two copies.
I'll have two copies eventually.
Also the artist tweeted a picture of the cover art he was working on, and actually he tweeted both that and Dragon Inn, so I think we can expect both. But looks great. I can't wait to see it.
Maybe we'll get him in a box set or something double. I mean, it just seems odd that they are so imminent, both movies. So maybe we're going to get a special edition.
We might. I think we might kind of get the Snowblood treatment for him. Who knows? Just speculating here, but would love to see it. I haven't seen either of those, but I've seen Come Drink With Me, which is it precedes this, and it's a Shaw Brothers movie. And so, of course, the rights are different, but it's a nice blend of art and martial arts.
Nice. Yeah. I think this was some folks call this, you know, one of the best, if not the best, wuxia film of all time in A Touch of Zen. So nice to see Criterion doing that.
I never knew how to say that. Wuxia. Okay.
I think it's wuxia or wuxia. I'm not sure which, but.
See, I was going to get in trouble and I was going to say wuxia.
Oh, nice with the X.
Yes.
So I've kind of alluded to this earlier, Aaron. I've jumped into the 4K waters, the Ultra HD waters.
I think this is fascinating. So tell the story. How'd this happen?
Well, it's really, the funny thing is it wasn't my choice. It really wasn't. My wife, we had a TV that was dying. We have kind of a movie room upstairs where I have my normal surround sound TV, plasma TV. And downstairs, we had our first HD TV that really was dying. It's not in good shape. And she wanted to put it downstairs for part of as having a workout room and wanted to put a new TV in the living room. So, I mean, am I going to say no?
No.
It's new technology.
Absolutely not.
So, you know, and we looked at just doing an HD TV because they are a little bit cheaper, but found a really good deal and just said, you know, if we're gonna buy a new TV, we might as well get Ultra HD. And I am pretty good at finding deals, and I did find a really good deal on a Samsung. It's a 50-inch, and you know, got it on eBay, read some reviews, found the right price, found the right movie, ordered it, and it's nice. You know, I guess just as a brief review, I still love my plasma. And I think the reason is it has the inky blacks. I don't know if I've mentioned before, but it just has those colors. And I know plasma uses more energy than the LED TVs, but I still think as a technology, it's overall superior to those two for movies anyway. The other thing is this TV, it's a I wanted to make sure I got something that had good Hertz rating. I'm not going to say the word correctly, but it's 120. That's right, 120 Hertz versus a lot of them were like 60. Mm. And this one has the motion rate technology, which puts it up to 240 Hertz. But the thing is, and it's a refresh rate. That's what the I meant to say before. The plasma has 600 Hertz just inherently. And so, you know, my six-year-old plasma in some ways still looks better. I mean, it kind of makes it look a bit like the 48 frames per second of The Hobbit, where it doesn't quite look natural to us, you know. And then the subtitles are, it's actually weird. The motion flow technology can't keep up with the subtitles. So for those of us that like, you know, we watch foreign films, it's got this kind of weird, almost like pixelating when the camera is moving in more. When it's stationary, you don't notice it. So, just a little bit odd. I mean, overall, there's not much 4K technology. We watched a few things on YouTube, which, you know, looks great. But, you know, it's fine. I just, I guess my feedback is I'm going to stick with my plasma for a little while and just enjoy my HD, you know, regular HD for most of the movies. Again, we watch upstairs, and this will be kind of our, you know, our main family TV.
So you're not going to go rebuy all your DVDs in 4K format?
No.
Well,
no.
My dad has a 4K TV, and he was an early adopter. He got one, I think, last year before there was any media. And so he showed me some things up there. But of course, there no discs. I think there were some things on Netflix, I think, and I think there was a one TV series on Sci-Fi. It was 12 Monkeys is on 4K. So if you want to look for that, I don't think that series is my speed. But he had me watch some of it, and it did look nice. But, you know, I have to say, and I know probably people said this 30 years ago or 20 years ago when these other formats changed, but Blu-ray, I think, is pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'll be in a hurry to upgrade the TV. I guess when I upgrade my TV, you know, maybe not for a while, maybe years down the road, probably 4K will be what I'll buy because that's what they'll sell.
Right.
But I think I'll still watch Blu-rays, you know.
Yeah. Well, the Blu-rays still look great on the 4K TV, too. You know, they still look the same, although the technology, like I said, is a little bit different in the way it's rendered. But, yeah. And I think part of it is the size, too. Unless you're getting, you know, 60, 65, 70-plus inch TVs, I just don't know if it, you know, makes that much of a difference. The color is nice. And I remember Ryan Gallagher was saying, make sure you get the good HDR, you know, for those those colors. And it does really. I did notice when I popped in Lady Snowblood, the colors were, you know, that much better. And, you know, looking at the 4K, you know, native 4K video, it does look really nice. But yeah, Blu-ray, HD, it's a nice format.
I'd be curious if you do eventually buy one, like maybe The Force Awakens, if it comes out in 4K, to give a review of an actual feature disc.
So, yeah, it'd be fun. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, now that they're out there, if I buy a Blu-ray, if it's available in 4K, I'll buy it because it's, you know, dual format. It comes with both.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I'll get, you know, like I'll probably get Star Wars or, you know, The Martian or something like that.
Dual format. So. Don't let's not get on that subject.
We'll save that for another show.
Yeah. Yikes. Well, you know, we intended to keep these shows around an hour, but we wanted to, and we're already approaching that. But we wanted to also talk about some movies we've seen lately. And well, lo and behold, we found that we can talk for a long time about various
crazy
stuff.
Yeah.
Although probably the troll talk take some real estate from this episode. So do you want to just maybe briefly take maybe two each?
Yeah.
And
yeah, that sounds good.
Just snippet reviews?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to go first, Aaron?
Well, okay. I have a Criterion one, so hold on.
Okay.
A Poem is a Naked Person, the Les Blank documentary about Leon Russell. I almost couldn't remember the musician, which was, and I'm a big Les Blank fan. I really loved that box set that Criterion put out. I guess it was a year before last. It was good. I'm probably not a Leon Russell fan, even though I do like a lot of roots rock and I like a lot of blues. He didn't, as a musician, and I know he was a very talented pianist, but he didn't really draw me in as a musician. Some songs were good. A Song for You is a good one. And I thought that the, you know, them showing him living, the, you know, him being a country guy and living in the in a rock and roll lifestyle, rich man lifestyle, was pretty interesting. And you had all the Les Blankisms with, you know, you saw the little things in nature, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I thought it was a solid movie. It wasn't my favorite Les Blank movie, but it's worth seeing. So, yeah, cool. I'd say maybe, I think I put 7 on Letterboxd.
Nice. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Leon Russell, so I'm kind of looking forward to it for that. Definitely a music fan, so I'll look forward to that. Nice. Well, I'll mention one that actually has a tie-in to a recent review of ours. Watched this one with my wife. Had to actually get it from the local library versus interlibrary loan in The Miracle Worker. So the tie-in is stars Anne Bancroft. Of course, it stars Patty Duke. So it's Arthur Penn directed about Helen Keller. So it really good film. They both reprise their roles. It started as a stage play, The Miracle Worker, with the two actresses, and they reprise their roles here Wanted to mention it too because of the the sad passing recently. We just watched this movie and Patty Duke passed away sadly. But yeah, I mean, I would recommend it if you're looking for something for Patty Duke. Some of the scenes where they're on screen and some of them are extended takes. I mean, it does feel like a film or a film that is taken from the stage. You can kind of see it. But when they're on screen together, it's just gold for some of the scenes. It's really, really good and affecting. And both actresses are just fantastic. Some of the best performances that I've seen. So Miracle Worker, probably from your local library, I would highly recommend.
Well, maybe Criterion will get it.
Yes.
I shouldn't say that. I have no idea what studio has it. So
Yeah, no idea either, but it would be a good pick. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't seen that, and I like a lot of those old classic films, so I'll have to look for that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. Yep.
Okay, well, I guess we're kind of like a speed dial, like a speed round short takes here.
Speed short take.
Really short. Well, one kind of caught me off guard with how much I loved it, so I chose this one, is The Swimmer from 1968. And that's one with Burt Lancaster as a guy who swims once, who dreams. You can't really make sense of it from the plot description, but his goal is to swim across the county, swimming pool by swimming pool. And I know logically that doesn't make any sense. You have to watch the movie, and it's just Burt Lancaster wearing swimming trunks the whole movie, which is a little weird, but he goes from neighbor to neighbor, and kind of the narrative, it's really unique for 1968. The narrative reveals something new each time, and I really was fascinated by this film. I thought Lancaster was amazing, just the way he, there were some issues with the character, and I thought he really sold those. And actually, it was Joan Rivers had her first appearance, which was weird to see.
Wow.
Yeah. I
didn't realize that was her first.
Actually, there were a few notable actors, but and this one was...
Frank Perry,
thank you. And Sidney Pollack also was affiliated with that. So yeah, and actually when I tweeted about it, Martin, speaking of Martin Kessler, he's a big fan of it as well, and he was curious what I thought. And I loved it. I gave it a 9 out of 10 on Letterboxd, and I was very surprised by it.
Nice. Yeah, Blu-ray.com, except for the movies, a 4.5 star, gives it 5 stars across the board, video, audio, extras. So, yeah, I have it. I just haven't had a chance to see it from Grindhouse releasing. I really want to check it out.
I didn't watch the features, but there were quite a few. And, yeah, the picture and sound were just gorgeous, again, for 1968. And I think this is probably one of those postcode 1968. They do push the boundaries a little bit, just like The Graduate and Bonnie and Clyde. Just this one's not as famous as those.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to check it out. So the other one I'll mention briefly is this was the Colombian entry into the Oscars for 2015 for a foreign language film. It was nominated, made the top 5, did not win, but it is Embrace of the Serpent. So this is I really like this movie quite a bit. It's about, well, I don't know if how much I want to say about it, but it's all black and white. It was shown for our local film society. Was the biggest movie that they attendance-wise they've ever had, and part of that was I actually didn't make it. I had screened it before, but I think was part of the discussion and who they had for a guest. But Ciro Guerra, I believe the director and writer is. Reminded me of, if folks have seen it, a bit of Apocalypse Now with a Journey and some of the scenes, the Jesus scenes. Also thought of Herzog with the rubber and, of course, being in nature. Reminded me of, what's the one where he pulls the boat across the mountain?
Oh, Fitzcarraldo.
Fitzcarraldo, thank you. Yeah, with the rubber barons.
Wow. You just sold me.
Oh, it's I think it'd be right up your alley, Aaron. Gorgeous cinematography. Very good film. I was expecting good things. They usually make good picks, and I mean, it has an 8.2 on IMDb, so would have been a worthy winner of the Oscar. it plays a little bit with time. There's some, you know, moves back and forth in time a bit between two time periods with the same character. So, yeah, definitely recommend it. Embrace of the Serpent. I'd give it. I didn't rate it, but if I was going to rate it, certainly give it an 8 out of 10.
Cool. Well, it actually played here, and I missed it, so I'll look for it on video. Nice. So I thought you were going to go Batman versus Superman, or Batman v Superman. Is that what it's called?
Oh yeah. Well, I should mention that. I'll just say briefly, it's not as terrible as people say, but I had very low expectations. 2.5 hours, I was at least entertained, but it's not a good movie. I mean, it's not.
That's. I've kind of raised expectations a little bit. Mine were in the toilet. But yeah, some people I really respect really love the movie. So, but I'm not going to go see it in theaters. I'll wait for it to come on video, or you know, this might be a digital rental or kind of movie.
Well, I mean, it's I guess it's worth seeing on the big screen if you like the, you know, the big movies like that, but it'll work on the small screen. It's not, I went because my son wanted to go, and you know, it's not as bad as, it's not just putrid, but it's not a good film either. It's Zack Snyder. I mean, you'll get what you're expecting.
that's what I've heard a lot. Yeah. Well, okay, since you did 2.5, I'll just say that I'll do 2.5, and I'll say that I disappointed another Criterion Connection, Guillermo del Toro. I hated Crimson Peak, and I hated that I hated Crimson Peak.
Oh, you're killing me.
Sorry. I won't go any further because I don't want to get into spoilers. But did you liked it?
I did. I liked it more than most people. I think it just looks gorgeous. Probably the most beautiful film I saw all year. But
it looked good. Yeah, I mean, like, it was the cinematography. You can expect that from Del Toro. Just everything else. And actually, the ghosts, they just didn't really do it for me. I thought about The Innocents and how, you know, because they're kind of...
Yeah, I saw your comparison there on Twitter with the two pictures.
And even with the spookiness, you know, I mean, you don't have to show that much. Anyway.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, I think Del Toro sometimes likes to show it, especially now. You know, that's kind of his visual style. But no, that's a good point. And some of the characterizations weren't that great. I did like the way the ending worked. Again, not getting into spoilers. But it's not a great film. But it's one that just based on the, you know, the cinematography and the set design alone, I'll probably buy at some point.
Yeah, it did end better, but I'm not going to go into the ending, but Jessica Chastain didn't have a lot to do for a lot of the movie, but you know, she had something to do at the end. But and she, of course, we know she's a good actress.
Yeah.
And then Hiddleston and I'm not going to try to pronounce Mia Waza whatever.
Wazakowska, think it is, but yeah.
Yeah, I just thought they were kind of weak. So anyway, I didn't mean to spend a few minutes hating on the film, but so.
Yeah, it's still Toro. Got to talk about it.
You do.
Maybe it'll look good in Ultra HD just because of those colors. We'll see.
Maybe. So that can be your first purchase.
That's right.
All right, let's wind the ship down. We can talk about film. Wow.
I know. Go figure. For over an hour. I hope folks enjoyed it. You know, we'll certainly be doing something like this again. We'll have different topics. We'll do some short takes and have some stuff to talk about. It was a lot of fun, Aaron.
It was fun, yeah. I enjoyed it. And in fact, there were a couple things we wanted to cover that we didn't get to. So
yeah, go figure.
We'll save those for next time.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for listening to Criterion Close Up. Just plug our next show. We will be recording in, we'll have it out probably about a week from the time that you're listening to this. We'll have a Criterion Close Up episode with a special guest, someone on the just distribution side. Looking forward to that. And folks can find the show Criterion Close-Up at CriterionCU on Twitter, CriterionCloseUp.com, and Facebook/CriterionCloseUp. And Aaron, where can folks find you?
AWest505 on Twitter.
Excellent. Yep. You can find me, Mark Kearney, H-U-R-N-E is the last name, on Twitter and on Letterboxd. Anything else to plug, Aaron?
Avenge us. Give us an iTunes review. And and another thing I noticed people did is they went in and they voted down that really nasty one as not helpful. So do that too.
More of that. Yes.
More of that. That was not helpful.
We definitely need some more reviews. Some random person gave us one star too, so some star reviews and reviews, please. That would be great. Thank you for supporting us and for listening.
People can criticize me, but about a lot of things, but Clueless about film is not one of them.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I meant to mention that. That's just not even within the realm of possibility. So yeah. Well, thanks everyone for listening to Criterion Close Up. We'll talk to you soon. Janome no